Hello, everybody. Ian here. Before we start the show, I just want to have a brief little message here. We've been coming along a lot these past 2 months, and I just want to say thank you to everybody who's been listening. We've been getting a lot of kind notices, and we all really appreciate that. But we want to keep pushing this podcast forward, making it better and better. If you're a fellow podcasters out listening, we want to cross-promote. We'd love to promote your podcast on ours and vice versa. And also, if there's anybody out there who'd like to be, we have two commercial break spaces, and we want to know if there's anybody out there who wants to sponsor our podcast. We'd greatly appreciate it. We don't know if we're ready for the big leagues yet. Maybe not like stamps.com or carrierpigeon.com. That I might have just made one of those up. But you know, anything at all. On behalf of Nick, Cassie, and I, once again, we're all thankful for everybody who's listening, and let's get back to the show.
Coming at you from coast to coast, it's the Real Deal Podcast. Here are your hosts, Ian Phillips and Cassie Grimaldi.
Yeah!
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a bonus episode of the Real Deal Podcast.
Congratulations, you've unlocked the bonus episode. Your princess is in this castle.
As always, my name is Ian Phillips. My name hasn't changed yet. I still am writing about movies and talking about movies and reviewing movies
for that special
and
guy.
Doing everything movies. And I'm here as always with my co-host Cassie Grimaldi. Hello, Cassie.
Hi. Hi, Ian. Yeah. Hi.
I don't know why we're really giggly tonight, but I'm really excited. This is we're doing a special bonus episode because we had a lot of stuff we wanted to talk about in our previous episode but couldn't fit it all in. We decided tonight we're going to do another classics exchange. This is where I take a movie that I consider to be a classic and have Cassie watch it. And Cassie gives me one of her favorite movies, and I watch it. So this week,
which does not qualify as a classic, apparently. Well,
I don't know, classic or wait, what? I didn't even hear what you said, but whatever. I don't know, classic or a childhood favorite, something that you like to watch a lot growing up, and you think is still great today. But anyway, I had Cassie this week watch Once Upon a Time in the West, and Cassie gave me 10 things I hate about you to watch, and I think we had a lot of fun doing this. So let's get started. First off, we're going to talk about Once Upon a Time in the West. That's what you watch, Cassie.
Mm-hmm. That's what happened.
This is one of my favorite movies of all time. I didn't really get it the first time I saw it as I was really young, but it became one of my favorite movies ever, and I'll just give you a brief synopsis. So if you haven't seen it, Once Upon a Time in the West is a spaghetti western. So this is a western that came from Italy, and it's directed by Sergio Leone, who you probably know better for directing The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly with Clint Eastwood. Once Upon a Time in the West, whenever you see like a description for it online, like the word epic is always there. It is an epic masterpiece. In my opinion, I think it's the best western ever made, but it's the story, it's an interconnecting story of multiple different people who all want the same man dead. One of them, it focuses on Harmonica is the character's name. He doesn't really have a name, who's played by Charles Bronson. And he just, I almost said yarmulke. What I meant to say was harmonica. He just, that's a different kind of thing. He plays Harmonica all the time, and he's looking for the man who killed his father. And then, in the meantime, Claudia Cardinale plays a woman who comes from the South to the West to find her new family has been murdered, but she finds a lot of secrets within it. And all these stories kind of interlock. And this movie's really about, I guess, the making of and civilization of the West as it goes from a place where there's just a lot of gunslingers and anarchy to a place where there's law and order and water and trains, and it's way less boring than it sounds. But I've said enough here. I'm gonna let Cassie take it away. Cassie, this was your first time seeing Once Upon a Time in the West. Tell me, what were some of your thoughts on it?
This was my first time seeing this movie, and I really, really liked it. One of the things I like most about it was that it's captivating and interesting, even though there's not a lot of dialogue.
Not at all.
And it's shot a lot of the same scenery, but it's shot in widescreen by the cinematographer, Bertolucci, I believe. Put my pinky out for that one. And so it's really beautiful, and I wish I got to see it on something bigger than my $100 TV from Best Buy.
I wish I could have seen this in theaters.
Yeah, me too. It's really beautiful to look at and really interesting, and it sort of leaves you hanging on for, like, these great badass one-liners from Charles Bronson.
And Henry. That's something I want to say. This movie's really well known for not having a lot of dialogue, but all of the dialogue they have is really top-notch.
Yes, it is. As I was saying, yeah, it really keeps you hanging on for the one-liners exchanged almost as if they were bullets between the gunslingers in this movie.
That's a good little metaphor there.
Thank you so much.
My favorite line in this movie, as I've told you before, is when Henry Fonda tells a man who's wearing both a belt and suspenders, "How do you trust a man wearing suspenders and a belt? The man can't even trust his own pants." Like, yeah. I think that line is just brilliant.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Pretty good.
Anything else that you, like, noticed about this movie, or, like, some of the other interesting thoughts you might have had? Do you think it lives up to the hype?
It lived up to the hype. One of the themes I really liked about it was, like, sort of the idea of foresight. I forget what the property they're all sort of fighting over is called. It's, like, Sweetwater or something.
Something like that, yeah.
Right? Yeah, so the guy in the beginning who gets shot by Henry Fonda, he, like, had the foresight to know that, like, this one little property had, like, the only water source for, like, miles and miles, had, like, the only well or something. And he knew that
the trains would need the water.
The trains would need the water, and so he had potential to make money from it. But I just thought that idea sort of, like, really carries over with people thinking they're making the right decision but not really being in control when it comes to decision making.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really cool, which was sort of all over the movie and sort of carries right through to the ending, which I definitely won't spoil because it's really cool. And
will say, like, the showdown that, like, people will make fun of in West, like people might, like, satirize from Westerns, like, this is what, like, it probably, it, people usually would mention this movie.
Yeah, it's definitely very, I guess it, like, any, it's a very, it's definitely referenced a lot, but it ends with a duel between the antagonist and the protagonist, as one would imagine it, that it would in a Western, and, it seems very hyperbolic. There's, like, a bunch of, like, slow zooms and quick draws and all this stuff, and there's so much tension built up, and it's referenced so heavily, and it's sort of really, it was cool to see how it worked in a way that didn't seem silly.
This was, I can't remember, it might have been, this movie's, like, something that Tarantino rips off, like, all the time. Like, you might hear music.
Especially with music.
Yes, there's so much of this music you'll hear in his other movies, but I can't remember if it was him that said this or he was quoting somebody else talking about Sergio Leone's movies and why they have these long showdowns, and, like, the quote, the reason was, why rush death? And it's kind of like, sometimes there are certain scenes, like, you will know the outcome, and drawing out the tension makes it all the better.
Yeah, it's really cool. The tension is really important, and, like, sort of these long scenes are, I think, different than Leone's, like, old style. I think, like, his Good, the Bad, the Ugly is a little more fast-paced, and
it's still a long one, though.
The Dollars series, right?
The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is like technically A Fistful of Dollars for a few dollars more, and The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is a trilogy. Like, they all use different characters, yeah, but all three, it's all considered, it's called like the Dollars trilogy or the Man with No Name trilogy.
And I think it, Once Upon a Time in the West is sort of a departure from his a little more of a fast paced style. And I think it's cool to see a movie that was free to be in love with itself, if that makes sense.
Yes, that absolutely makes sense. It is, I guess you could say it's like a little bit in love with itself, but it kind of deserves, I guess it kind of earns, yeah, it earns the
it
right
deserves to be.
Because it's made so well, and it's over, I guess the movie's, it's well over 40 years old now, and it looks just as good today as it did back then. Like, nothing in it looks like cheesy. Like, there's no bad special effects that I can remember. Everything looks great in it.
There's not a lot of blood either.
No, there's really not. There's a lot of deaths, but not a lot of blood. But this came out, like, this was made in Italy, so like the code and standards there were different, but like this movie came out in 1968, which I think in America was like a big year in terms of, like, 67, 68 were in big terms of movies that showed more violence and sex in them, and it came at a very good time.
Yeah.
But what did you think of...
What was I just going to say? What was your question?
I was going to ask, some of the casting choices are really interesting in this movie, especially Henry Fonda, who was known before this to play... he always played really good guys. And Sergio Leone cast him on purpose to play against type in this.
Yeah, I was reading something that said he was, like, trying to convince Henry Fonda to be in it. And he's like, how cool would it be if you just, like, had a shot of a gun at someone's waist and you panned up and it was just Henry Fonda looking you in the face? And how, like, ironic and cool would that be for a movie to have power over you? And he said, you're just going to have so much fun playing with that sort of irony.
Spoiler alert, so. It is really cool.
Yeah.
And also Charles Bronson is really awesome in it too, and like I think he's well known today and like got other roles. He was in random movies in the 70s, he was in all the Death Wish movies, and like I think he deserved to become a really big action star, but he never did, and I don't know what happened. But he has very little dialogue in this, but like that makes the character even more awesome.
Yeah. I think Charles Bronson has, like, sort of that, like, cult that appreciates him and, like, loves Charles Bronson. So I would say he made it.
Once again, in Quentin Tarantino's eyes, he made it.
Yeah.
But is there anything else you want to say about any other thoughts you might have on this movie?
I really liked it, and it's very long, and it's hard for me to pay attention to long movies because I'm a terrible person, and I honestly had to watch this over three sittings because I got tired and I fell asleep. But that doesn't mean it's boring. That just means I was tired.
It's not the kind of movie you normally see today.
No, it's definitely not. And
it's weird because there are a lot of we were just complaining recently about how a lot of like big blockbusters that come out are like 2.5 hours long, but like none of them ever earn their running time, and this I think earns its running time 100%.
Yeah, totally,
definitely.
But
I'm really happy you watched this. This movie definitely had a really big impact on the movies I was choosing to watch when I was first getting into movies and obsessing over movies. Actually, the first time I ever attempted to write a screenplay, I wrote it in some little notebook I had at summer camp, and while I was writing it, I realized that I was basically just writing a really terribly written ripoff of Once Upon a Time in the West, just basically Once Upon a Time in the West written by a seventh grader. I even remember some of the lines of dialogue that I wrote in it. Maybe one day I will unearth the script. I just remember that somebody gets murdered and some old man yells, "You bastards, you'll pay for this." And that's something I...
Oh, perfect. Exactly. That's a movie.
That's a movie right there. But anyway, my point is, for my first few years of trying to figure out storytelling, every story I thought of was somewhat derivative of this movie. And I'm kind of just realizing now how much of an impact it had. And this movie really taught me to be patient and watch things that might be a little quieter. Okay, so now I'm going to talk about the movie Cassie had me watch. So Cassie assigned for me to watch 10 Things I Hate About You, the 1999 classic. Cassie, why don't you, for our audience members who haven't seen or are not familiar with it, why don't you give us a little background, a little synopsis of 10 Things I Hate About You?
Okay. I have this totally planned out. Ready? Yes. The year was 1999, and somewhere in Hollywood, some guy was like, let's make a ton of movies about high school. I think in 1999, there were maybe 20 movies that were just teen movies, teen comedies, which is insane. And some of the best ones were made. American Pie and 10 Things I Hate About You, which are two of my favorites. So, yeah. What were you saying?
You're forgetting. Well, maybe you were going to mention it, but you're forgetting my favorite high school movie from that year.
What's Election. Oh, yes, Election.
Election is amazing. That's for another podcast. Anyway, keep going.
So, yeah, 1999. What a year, am I right? I wasn't in high school, but I sure wished I was, because these kids were just having fun on screen. That is for sure. So, anyway, if you're a normal human, you've seen 10 Things I Hate About You over and over again, but if you're Ian Phillips, you haven't seen it.
Now I have.
So for all those Ian Phillips out there, I'll give you a brief synopsis. 10 Things I Hate About You is based on Shakespeare's play The Taming of the Shrew, which is about these two sisters, and everyone wants to date Bianca, who is the younger one, and she's so beautiful and pretty. But their father's very strict, and he has a rule that Bianca can only be dated or courted or married or whatever the Shakespearean term was.
Courted sounds good.
Sure. The older sister, Katarina, gets married first. And she's really difficult, and they call her the Shrew because she's shrill and hard to get along with. But really, she just is a lady with her own opinions. So, yeah. And so, it makes a great high school comedy. So, I forget what the guy's name is in the Shakespeare play, but Cameron, played by tall child Joseph Gordon-Levitt, sees Bianca one day, and he's like, whoa, who's that pretty girl? And Bianca's sort of vapid and dumb, and one of my favorite lines is when she is talking to her friend Chastity, and she says, and Chastity asks her, I know you can be overwhelmed, and you can be underwhelmed, but can you ever just be whelmed? Or no, Bianca asks that, and then Chastity replies, I think you can in Europe, which is so true. Right? Okay, so Cameron loves Bianca, and his friend, played by the incomparable David Krumholtz.
Who I think the casting notice for this was, we need a Jew.
Yeah, that was definitely it. He's neurotic, and he tells her, whoa, 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 you can't date Bianca, because no one will date Katarina. And that's when we meet Kat, who is just playing some Joan Jett in her car, like all women do, and being really difficult. And she's a feminist, and she wants to go to Sarah Lawrence and be a feminist and listen to girl bands. And she's really cool, and she's played by Julia Stiles. And so, in order for Cameron to date Bianca, he hires, Patrick, who's played by Heath Ledger.
The one and only.
Who is, this crazy guy from Australia who smokes in class and, draws a penis on David Krumholtz's face and is just a rebel without a cause. And, wouldn't you know it, he hires Patrick to fall in love with Kat. Kat falls for him, Cameron and Bianca can date, and Patrick is still being paid, but he falls for Kat, and then hijinks ensue because it's like, you're lying to me, blah, 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 you only
wanted to get in my pants in high school drama, and am I going to go to college? I don't know. Let's all go to the prom. It gets crazy. It's a good movie. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
You can't go wrong. And that's what happens in 10 Things I Hate About You.
Yes. I thought 10 Things About I Hate About You was actually very good. It was a pleasant surprise. I don't know if I was resistant for it to it for years. It looked... There's something about it that didn't like look like something I wanted to see. I guess I judge too quickly, but it's surprisingly funny. There's a lot of incredibly quotable lines I'd probably heard throughout the years and had no idea what they meant. It's a really good high school story. I like the way they make it a modern day Shakespeare, but make everybody talk like normal people. Which is like,
except for certain lines that aren't direct,
which were kind of cool.
Like when Cameron first sees Bianca and he says, "I burn, I pine, I perish."
Yeah,
which is from The Taming of the Shrew.
Yes, which is what this is based off of. That makes sense. I wonder who just like suddenly decided that they wanted to set The Taming of the Shrew in a modern day high school. Whoever the
some guy, some girl,
whoever the screenwriter was. But anyway, I like going back and seeing old high school movies and then finding out that a lot of people who are now famous were in it before they were well known. Like, I had no idea Julia Stiles was in this. Joseph Gordon-Levitt was already like a well-known child star trying to break through, but like Cassie said, he's kind of a tall child. There is another great high school story out this year, out in 1999, which was Freaks and Geeks, which David Krumholtz was also in. I want to make note that Allison Janney is also in this movie. She has a great little cameo as a...
Mrs. Perky. Miss Perky.
You're close. Same idea. And she likes to write erotic fiction in her free time and gets really mad when people get sent into her office. In fact, I really like, they show a lot of like the tension between teachers and students in this, which is played for laughs a lot. Like the English teacher that Kat has, whose name is Mr. Morgan, who's played by Daryl Mitchell, but in the credits it's Daryl Chill Mitchell. But anyway, like he just kicks her literally every time she opens her mouth. Like he can't tell if she's being serious or not, so he just kicks her out of class instead of finding out if she's being serious or not.
And she's being serious. She's a smart lady. She's just a little sassy.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's Mr. Stratford, who's played by Larry Miller, who you've seen in things here and there, he's kind of like a caricature throughout because he's a doctor, delivers babies.
He's a gynecologist,
that's the word I'm looking for. And he just like keeps warning his daughters, like basically like if you go out with the guy, you're gonna get pregnant right away. There's a scene where Kat crashes his car because she's really angry that day, and he just goes up to her and says, "My insurance doesn't cover PMS." Which was like, I just could not believe I heard that line. But anyway,
90s were a different
Yes, they time. Were. There's a lot of things like that. There's people just casually smoking at school. There's jokes about violence at school, the kind of things you can't really do today. But I just want to note there's one very nice moment towards the end where Mr. Stratford and Kat like have a little father-daughter moment, and it's like very sweet. And like for the first time, you kind of see him as a real person when he tells her that it's okay for her to go to Sarah Lawrence because he's resistant the whole time. Mm-hmm. And this movie also stars Heath Ledger. I think this is one of his... This might be, like, his first big role in America, at least.
Yeah, in America. He's definitely in other stuff overseas.
Yeah, he's from Australia originally. It's really funny because in this, the one way they got around his semi-Australian accent is to just say, oh, the character was from Australia originally. I love when they do that in movies when they tailor the character, the person in real life. I remember in How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, they just, like, make up a backstory where Matthew McConaughey's character's dad is from Texas just to justify his accent because it makes no sense that he's in New York with a Texas accent.
Yep. But
Heath Ledger is really awesome in this, and I've actually only seen, I think I've only seen, like, 3 or 4 movies with Heath Ledger, and every single one was so different.
Yeah.
He had really great incredible range. There's a really something
an incredible dimple.
Yes, that's as Cassie says. But there's, what's the song that he sings in the stadium? The name of it.
The Frankie Valli song, I Can't Take My Eyes Off.
Yes, that's a really, sometimes in rom-coms they'll do that. They'll have a big musical number, like something, a big speech where somebody takes over a public space. And sometimes it's kind of ridiculous, but it worked really well here in the scenes. Really
it
funny.
It happens really early on in the movie, too.
You're right.
That's how he sort of wins
Cat. Yeah, that usually would happen. I remember I've heard about that scene before, as it's really famous, and I figured, oh, that's going to be the big ending scene, but no. The big end scene just happens during senior prom.
Senior prom, I'm telling you, there's so many high school movies today. Well, actually, there's not even a lot of high school movies today, because maybe there's a general feeling that 1999, they totally peaked.
Yes.
But I think that the prom was always, like, the best part of the high school movie. But, I mean, like, the prom. It was everything and more.
Yeah.
Like, everything comes to a head, and I think more teen movies should have awesome proms in them, because who cares about realism?
It's exactly. Now, do you think this, like, that what was, like, I think it was, I've seen, there was a bunch of high school movies I saw before I got into high school, and sometimes they set up expectations for me, and like sometimes I like them so much even though I knew nothing about high school. Like I saw Dazed and Confused in eighth grade and I loved it. I think it set up really unrealistic expectations, but I think I thought that like every night would be a Dazed and Confused type night, but it never really was. I still love that movie though. But did you see this before you got into high school?
Yeah, I saw this when I was 10.
And what did this make you think about high school and after leaving high school? Do you think this movie is realistic at all to the actual high school experience?
Oh, no. It didn't really give me false expectations. I thought maybe I'd go to, parties or something, because there's also a great party scene in this movie. But, But it didn't give me false hope.
No.
Maybe it gave me, I don't know, hope that Heath Ledger would fall in love with me. But that's about it.
By the way, speaking of that party scene, you're referring to the one at Bogie Lowenstein's house. This one part made me, I laugh really hard at random lines that aren't even funny, are supposed to be funny, but there's a part where the doorbell, like the door, it's like a really quiet get together and the doorbell rings and he just goes,
the future like CEO's party, yes, or something like that. That's what
and
it's
the
called.
Doorbell rings and he goes, that must be Nigel with debris. And then he opens the door and there's just like a million kids come in with beer. But like, I could not stop laughing at that line.
It's just, there's so many good little things.
Yes, there is. That's one thing I can relate to though, because I remember in high school, I went to one little gathering that turned into a giant party that turned into some damaged property. I think it was not at my house. It was at somebody else's house. But anyway, I think a lot of people experience things like that. I won't say everybody because I don't want to generalize.
Yeah, I don't know. I never went to a big party like that.
I didn't really.
The parties I went to were always at, like, not nice houses. They were, like, parties where, I don't know.
And I will what about this movie got to you at such a young age and made it one of your favorites?
No, I just liked it so. I think I really liked the music in it.
There's great music.
I really loved how much I could relate to the sister dynamic, because I feel like for me, especially when I was like young and sort of like going through puberty and blah blah blah, my sister was always very like effeminate and very girly, sort of like Bianca, and I was always very like tomboyish and sort of basically existed in opposition to things, just like Kat Stratford did. So I found myself really, really relating to them, even though I was the younger sister and she was, and my sister was older. But
the dynamic was the same.
Yeah, same dynamic. I always think movies that talk about like teen sex when you're like 12 are like always really interesting. I definitely watched this movie like so many times at sleepovers at my friend's house, and we were all like, thought we were so enlightened about that stuff.
I love when you I think there's sometimes when you thought you were enlightened
it's
because
exciting.
You watched this. and you could hear these things. I think it's, I remember when you're, this probably, it probably lasts from like later in elementary school, like through eighth grade. There's like a period of time when you'll see a certain movie that you're probably not supposed to see. And like, you feel a little air of superiority to everybody else because you had seen it. I could name so many like sometimes you just be like a raunchy R-rated comedy or something else. I just remember there's a lot of movies I saw in middle school and I was like, I bet nobody's heard of this.
You had older siblings.
Yes, that they did. I was introduced to things I wouldn't normally like. The reason I found out about Once Upon a Time in the West was because my brother is really obsessed with westerns and really old westerns. I don't think I ever would have found out about it any other way. I mainly stole most of my movie taste from my older siblings. Mm-hmm. So that was why I found out about stuff like that in middle school, and it still stuck with me to this day. Yeah. I found my own path in movie watching eventually. But I do, the things you see when you're like in middle school really can, like, this is like some, I don't know, there's some movies I think that eventually kind of fade away and like you kind of over time realize you didn't like them as much. For me, that's like American Beauty. But like, how come 10 Things About I Hate About You stays with you?
I don't know. Every time I watch it, I don't know. It's, I feel like I know it so well, and I just love the characters. I don't know why. I feel like they could be people I was friends with. I feel like it's really just as simple as that, that I love the characters so much. And
yeah, that's good.
I remember seeing this movie and getting The Taming of the Shrew out of the library and not enjoying it as much, but feeling like I could understand it because I saw this movie at 11 years old trying to read a Shakespeare play. And I don't know. I just really like it. It's simple.
That's another great thing about watching something you really like at that young age, is because you're much more impressionable and it will open a new world for you. Like, Once Upon a Time in the West introduced me to a new world of movies from that era and from those actors and that director and that genre. So I think that's really cool. Let's see, do you have any more, any closing thoughts? Something, any closing thoughts on 10 Things I Hate About You?
If you haven't seen it, you should be tried for war crimes and go watch it.
I got luckily I'm no longer on trial for that. Because I saw it and I'm really happy that I did get to see it.
We have other fish to fry now that I found out that Ian's never seen Love Actually.
Is it really, listeners, is this really a big deal? I haven't seen Love Actually.
He's never seen Varsity Blues either. Another 1999 teen movie.
I know. I've seen Election, and I've seen the seminal 1999 high school show Freaks and Geeks. So does that get me off at all?
Whatever.
Okay, I'll get on that, and I'll,
as they say in 1999 teen movies, whatever.
Exactly. Whatever. Whatever. I'm very whelmed by this whole conversation. I got you there. All right, everybody. For now concludes our conversation about these two classics. We're going to take a quick commercial break and we'll be right back with more Real Deal Podcast. Welcome back to the Real Deal Podcast, everybody. That's the end of this bonus episode. Thank you so much for listening. Just before we go, say a few words. Cassie, where can our listeners find more of you this week?
You guys can follow me on Twitter at Cassie Grimaldi if you want, but you should, because I need attention on the internet. So yeah.
Don't we all? And as always, you can find me on Twitter at Ian at Real Deal, and you can find all of my writing at realdealblog.com, R-E-E-L, reviews that go all the way back to the year 2008, and you can find my really horribly written review of the 2008 version of Rambo, if you really want to dig back that deep and see what a horrible writer I was sophomore year of high school. But You can also find other episodes of this podcast, reviews of movies like X-Men Days of Future Past and Neighbors on realdealblog.com. And also you can subscribe to us on iTunes and get automatic updates every time there's a new episode. We're happy you all listened to this bonus episode. We really love doing these classics exchange. And if you have any feedback or anything you want to tell us, just send me an email at Ian, I-A-N, at real, R-E-E-L, dealblog.com. And we hope we can do more of these classic exchange in the future. I enjoyed it. I'm happy I got to see the movie I saw. And so that's the end of...
Me too. Me too. So I was supposed to say me too.
Cassie enjoyed her movie too. Okay, so that's the end of our show. But thank you so much for listening. And as always, 3, 2, 1.
Keep it real.
Keep it real.
Keep it real.
One more. 1, 2, 3. Keep it real.
Keep it real.
Keep it real.
Keep it real.